Yeah, I'm recording. This is how I normally talk. I'm ready for the day.
Take a look at some of our favorites or least favorite albums.
Yeah, I would say that this is probably the first time we've taken a look at something that we collectively don't like.
Yeah. Normally our opinions are so varied that, you know, someone at least likes part of something that we listen to.
Yeah, sometimes there's a little bit of nuance.
Yeah, no nuance this time around, yeah. Folks.
Should we tell them what we're listening to?
Yeah, for sure. So. Give
All
them
right,
a heads up,
so
Steph.
So we're listening to July Talk's new album this week. It was released on July 10th. Do you think that they purposely waited to release it in July?
I would have if I was them.
That's fair.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like purposely wait to release it during a pandemic. And I was like, wow, that's some foresight.
What did they know that we don't?
Yeah, right. Do we know how long they worked on this album?
Has it come up in interviews? Dean, I saw them at Riverfest Alora back in the summer of probably 2018, I want to say. And when I saw them there, they were like, okay, we're going to go work on our new album. This is our last live show for a little while, which was a lie. But anyway, I'm not salty about it. But that was 2 years ago. That was like almost exactly 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So that means they've at least been working on this for 2 years, which, yeah.
Yeah, wild stuff. Anyway, folks, this new album is called Pray For It. I did a plosive into the mic and it popped. This new album is called Pray For It. I did it again. It's not going to stop. This new album is called Pray For It. We just listened to it. It's their third album. They put out an album in 2012. It was their debut self-titled album. And then in 2016, they put out Touch, which was their second record. And I don't know, do we want to go into the history of the band first before we dive into this new one? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we have a lot nicer things to say about their earlier albums.
That's right.
Well, and that's, I think, why I was so disappointed when I listened to this. So I had suggested we listen to this prior to myself actually listening to the album. And I was really excited because I love July Talk and their past two albums were awesome. You know, I think their first album had this like really raw rock and roll feel without all the bad sides of rock and roll. You know what I mean?
What are the bad sides?
Well, just like the misogyny and, you know, rude people and excessively long guitar solos.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, like those
things. Some of those things are worse than others, folks. Yeah,
like the guitar solos.
Exactly. I was listening to their debut album when it came out obsessively when I was a kid. I loved it. And especially, like, I loved how, like, sort of spiteful and sadistic it was. It is like an angry little album. And so it takes great delight and joy in how angry and sadistic and spiteful it is, which is great. And like the duet component of this band, because July Talk, you know, besides being a wider band, has the duet between Peter Dramanis and Leah Fey.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's fantastic because he's got like this gravelly, like growly, ugly, awful voice, which is cool. Like, not bad ugly.
Yeah, he goes for like this, like if Nick Cave and Tom Waits had like a drinking party.
Exactly. It's
that's
cool.
A good analysis.
And then Leah Fey has this like, you know, like light little like cute like fairy voice.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like this delicate little angel, and he's this just like devilish, rough. Yeah.
He is wild.
Well, and that's, I think, something that if once we get more into the like meat of this album, you just don't get. You know, like that was their big selling point in the other albums, especially for me, because I loved that balance they struck. And with this album, they just they're missing the rough side of it completely. Yeah. Like you don't even hear Peter Dramanis' voice come through on most of the songs in the way that you do in the past albums.
Yeah. What's our favorite word that we use all the time to describe, to compare every song?
Juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition. The juxtaposition of their two voices was what made the band, folks.
Sure. Steph, you've said you've seen them live before.
Yeah, right? A couple of times.
Pretty much the main thing that I've read about this band in researching them is that their live shows were nuts. You want to fill us in on that? Because I have not seen these people in person.
Oh, you're missing out. Well, and you probably will never see them the same way ever again if this is the music that they've put out. Because, you know, they have just this energy that I have seen unmatched. And I've been to a lot of live shows. It's embarrassing how many live shows I've been to.
Right.
You just don't get the same energy. Like, for example, I saw July Talk tour with Metric about a year ago. And July Talk was the first band because they weren't like opening for Metric, but they were kind of opening for Metric because there's no doubt that Metric has a way longer history, bigger following, etc.
Everybody's opening for Metric.
Exactly. But then you watch their show and their show ended and you were just on this huge high, and then Metric came out and you were like, this is the most disappointing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Doesn't even matter if Metric had their best show they've ever had, but following the kind of energy that July Talk brings, you just can't do it, because you've got the fact that, like, first off, Leah Fey does not stop moving the whole show.
Oh yeah.
Like, she just runs around the stage.
That's sick.
And like, she I guess used to be choreographer, that's the word. She used to be a choreographer. That's why like a lot of their music videos have these really cool dance elements. But then when you see her on stage, you can just tell. Like, she understands how to use the stage, how to use her body on the stage, you know, and then also how to interact with the other band members. And then you also put it into the fact that, like, Peter Germanis is just, like, this rock god on stage.
Yeah,
like,
he's wild.
Has this certain aura about him that, you know, like, when you see a photo of this guy, you're like, yeah, I guess he's not really super attractive. And then you see him on stage and you're like, oh my gosh.
Like, yeah.
Like, you know how they always joke that, like, anybody will sleep with a rock star just because they're a rock star? Like, Peter Germanis is like the epitome of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you put those two on stage and then you surround them with these like amazing musicians, like their drummer and their guitarist, and like, you know, they're all so talented.
And they go so hard.
Like, they go so hard, man. The whole show.
It's
and
so loud and angry.
Every time I've seen them, it's like that. This wasn't just like once in a while.
I did. I saw them.
I'm the odd one out here.
Yeah, a few years ago. It was cool. I saw them up in Muskoka someplace. And like, again, like Leah was like writhing around on the floor, just like having a ball. They invite people to come dance on stage. There was one couple. They were like an older couple. And the lady proposed to the dude on stage. And Leah started crying because it was so beautiful. And I was
it's also Leah Faye's personality to start crying.
Oh,
at that.
Yeah. No, for sure. She's like, oh, the power of love. And I was like, yeah, man, power of love. That's great. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? I had no idea. yeah, I would see these things online, people being like, they're known for their bombastic stage performance. But like, I don't know. I don't have any prior experience with this band. So I'm stoked that you guys have seen them.
Definitely, if you get the chance, I would go check them out. Like I said though, this album doesn't reflect their live performances.
No.
So like, I'm very worried about seeing them again in the future, because you just don't have that energy behind this album. And that's like, not that they're not talented musicians in their own right, but like, the energy is half the fun of going to their live show.
You through the walls of Jericho, pray for the best, avoid the worst, there is a first. Time for everything, there is a first. Time for everything, for what it's worth. The truth is not a curse.
No one can tell you what you already know.
Never stay on the cold side of the road. is not a test.
Yeah, and like, and I said this already, but again, like, especially with their first album, the meanness, like there's not like a hint or a drop of poison in this album, in this new album, like the first one had. Like the first one had lyrics like, "You don't look pretty when you smile, so don't smile at all," which is just brutal and awesome. Yeah.
That's true. That's really like,
yeah, and like them going back and forth, like slinging insults like that, and like all the songs are all about like mental illness and like drug use and unhealthy relationships.
And rock and roll stuff.
Yeah, rock and roll stuff. And how much fun you can have singing about those things.
I am mentally unwell.
Yeah, woo! But that's what the songs are like.
No, yeah.
But I mean, that's like, you even look at all the albums we've listened to thus far, you know, all of them have this kind of like musicians talking about their mental illness and also just being like, screw it.
Yeah.
Party time.
Like, we're going to get past this. It's fine.
Yeah. And that's how you sell records, baby. We love it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, 2016, they put out Touch, which was their second album, which I listened to a lot less than you did, Steph, as far as I know. So what did you think about that one? Because I thought that one started to lose some of like the grit and the anger that their first record had and started going like more political a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, you know, we were talking about this beforehand that you started listening to them right when their first album came out, whereas I didn't really get into them until after their second album came out. So for me, like when I saw them live, when I would listen to their music, and like I rarely get into a band until I've seen them live. That's just how I am.
Right.
And so, you know, when I saw them live, they were playing more of their stuff off the second album rather than the first. So like there are certain songs on the first album, like I was saying to you, Guns and Ammunition is probably like my favorite song by July Talk. I think it's their best song.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's off the first album. But then the second album, I definitely connect more with, and I think it's also just more catchy and like really fun sing-along songs almost.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially to see them live.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, then you also get like, I thought it was awesome, the song they did with Tanya Tagaq. It has such a cool vibe to it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, like, that's the kind of thing that I love from July Talk. And then you get, you know, again, into this album. Even just, like, their only featured song is Champagne, and it's just weird.
Yeah.
And not in the way, like, obviously the song they did with Tanya Tagaq, Beck and Call, was weird because you can't release music with Tanya Tagaq and not have it be weird.
Exactly,
but,
yeah.
Like, it was just so well done that you're like, I love this weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like their featured song Champagne here is just, I kind of finished it being like, that was weird, but not in a way that I really connected with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't have a history with this band, but it seemed like an album that a punk band would release after it decided it was going to do only rock ballads. You know what I mean?
That's exactly
like
it.
They're like, I think it's safe to say they are trying to sort of break free and escape from like what they were sort of shoehorned into.
Yeah.
With their 2012 album, because this like could not be further from it.
I think I don't know. We all have experience with following bands for a long time throughout albums and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get your guys' opinion on it. I find that usually when a band eventually kind of slows down with their music in trying to like break from the original sound, but like in a way that's kind of more refined and slowing down in a sense, calming down, I guess you could say, it doesn't have nearly as much of an impact as a band that is like, we're gonna try something different and goes like full experimental, like just Yahoo craziness.
Say slowing down and calming down, do you mean just like quieter, slower music?
No, I mean like not taking as many risks.
Oh, I see. So rather than sticking with what they are doing,
yeah,
branching. I agree. I feel like I have a unified theory of band album releases.
Ooh.
I think you put out your first record and it should be fun and quick and dirty, and then you put out your second record and it should be mostly like the first one. But you've got like a couple other things that you're doing like on the B-sides. And then by your third record, you need to sound like a different band. This is my theory. At least like have like some elements, but like it needs to sound different. So in a way, they followed that formula that I've always laid out in my head as what bands should do.
Right.
It just turns out they went in a direction that I did not want, and I want the old stuff back. So maybe don't listen to me. Maybe I don't even know what I want.
Oh yeah.
Folks.
Well, then that's a challenge that I face. That I don't like change. So yeah. Anytime a band strays from what I know them as, and like this is an issue that I know I need to get over, but I like categorizing people in genres. And despite the fact, like, and I know that like genres are a muddled thing, but you know, like your own personal mental genres. And when I want to listen to a fun rock band, I pick July Talk.
Okay.
And now I can't do that. You know? Right. So like even just the fact that like there's a couple of songs on this album that I do really like, and that when I heard them, I was like, this is great. But it doesn't fit into my own mental classification of what July Talk is.
Right.
And so then I struggle with it, right? And that doesn't like, and I think the biggest issue I have with this album is that, like you guys were saying, if it was so different that they took like a bunch of really cool risks and like changed their sound up enough, then maybe my brain would have then switched them in their classification and I still could have kept going.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem is this album is still similar enough to their sound that to me they still fit in the rock category, but not in the way that they used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just criticism like this always come down to like opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like this record was sort of like, I don't want to say phoned in, but it's definitely playing it safer.
So much.
And
except
like,
for Champagne anyway.
You don't,
yeah, Champagne.
Wait, you don't want to say phoned in?
No, I don't want to say phoned in because I don't want to accuse anyone of phoning anything in.
This album's phoned in. I'm kidding. I honestly have no idea. This is my first time listening to a full album of theirs, so I don't have much of an opinion. I'm just excited for your guys's.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like just the wind has been taken out of the sails a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and even just the fact that, again, they used to, like, the reason you listened to July Talk was, like we were saying, that dual voice going on. You've always got really impressive drumming that kind of keeps up the energy. Mm-hmm. And you've got awesome guitar riffs. Like, you can't deny that July Talk, like, even if you're not into that style of music, like, their guitar riffs that they have, especially, like, introing their songs and stuff, are always so cool and so catchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, almost even bluesy. In, I think I'm thinking of Lola and Joseph, where, like, it's the catchiest guitar riff,
yeah.
You know? And this album has none of those three things.
It's got some cool guitar solos. Little diddly boys.
They're okay. I don't know. They're not as, like, catchy as their last ones.
I have an opinion on the guitar solos. I don't know if I'm allowed to, though.
You are allowed to have that. Share with the class, please.
Well, the guitar solos on this album, like the, okay, if you, I'm going to get this out of the way, put it all on the table. This album, when I was listening to it, based on only knowing the singles that they had released previously, like I said, I hadn't sat down and listened to one of their albums. Only knowing the singles, I was like it was as if they released a demo that was from before they released their first album. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
It sounded like a group that hadn't found their sound yet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like if
yeah.
you
yeah.
change the chronological order, like if you put this as a release that was like recorded in 2011 before their first album, then it kind of makes sense because
yeah.
it's got the sound of, like, you know, it wasn't as...
It doesn't have, like, a cohesive
yeah, that's
sound
what
or idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does, like... And, of course, you need variety, but it does sort of sound a little... I don't want to say all over the place.
I think...
I keep saying the things that I don't want
to
say.
The word I would use is reductive. It's reductive.
Okay.
In the sense where it took this really interesting concept of their previous singles that I was familiar with and kind of just like crushed them down into very little. which sometimes can be really cool, streamlined, stripped down, whatever. And then other times, it ends up just kind of falling flat and you end up missing the other stuff. All right, I want to clarify first. My feelings about this album are completely opinionated. I did not try to come in here talking about this album on an objective level, because I feel like objectively it's a fine album, and I feel like they're all very good musicians, and you could tell the whole entire time. But it was the feeling and the expectations that I kind of focused on, because that was my immediate thought as soon as I put the album on.
Well, and I mean, that's the whole point of this. Show, right, that we have.
I
hope that nobody's tuning into this getting all upset because this is your favorite thing that's ever come out by July Talk, because you're valid in your opinion. Like, there's definitely merits to it, I think. And, you know, you came into it with certain expectations, but, like,
definitely.
Then you throw, like, me and Dean into the mix, who were previously massive fans of them, and it's just, like, throwing this
we're,
in.
We're
it's
coming
just,
from
know,
a place of love, folks.
Yeah.
Of identical
We don't
want to
lose our... We don't want to lose our band.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, it wasn't... It was almost more disappointing that it wasn't as much of a downside as it could have been. Like, it was just in the middle, where it's like, it's just not what I wanted. It's not terrible, though. Like, it's not horrendous.
Well, and that's why, too, like, coming in today, I said, you know, before you got here, I said to Dean, I was like, I don't know if I like this album, and I feel terrible about it, because, you know, how do you sit and talk on the radio about a band you love, but you just don't love
this? It just doesn't click with you.
And then
give it 10 years, and we're going to get tons of hate emails being haha, told you so, this was the greatest album of the year.
Honestly though, like, that wouldn't be a huge shock right now.
No, but that's what I mean. It's it's one of those things where I remember when the Strokes released new music, and whenever they've released new music,
God,
every single time I'm like, this is trash, and then 3 years later I'm putting it on and singing every single word.
That's a classic.
Well,
I don't know,
like,
if that's gonna happen with this album, but I'm just saying, sometimes you need to
happens,
give it time.
There was even stuff, though, that when I listened to this album the first time through, I was like, ugh, hate this. And then the second time I listened to it through, I was like, okay, I actually love these couple of songs.
Sure, you know,
so I think there's definitely, and maybe, too, if we have, because every other album we've talked about has been stuff that we've had time to digest a bit more.
Yeah.
Whereas this one was literally released, like, what, a week and a half ago?
Yeah.
So
I hadn't
heard this anywhere else. No, I hadn't. I'd heard a couple of the singles, but I didn't even listen to it until, like, yesterday.
Yeah. No, like, I, even, like, The Mountain Goats, which, as folks, listeners of the show know, is my favorite band. They'll put out something new, and I'll be like, oh man, like, he's really lost it this time around. Like, this is just, like, boring, and, you know, it doesn't really inspire me at all. And then I listen to it, like, seven more times straight in a row that day, and I'm like, no, this is a heartbreaking work of staggering genius.
Actually, he's a mastermind.
He is, yeah. But, folks, I'd also be remiss if I did not mention this album, because we mention it in every episode. But Peter and Leah actually met at a bar in Toronto called The Communist Daughter. Folks, Aeroplane, another little hint in the listening party cinematic universe
that
I'm constructing.
We can never talk about Aeroplane.
It'll be our last episode ever will be Aeroplane.
You know what? I guarantee you episode 100 of the listening party is going to be a review of Aeroplane.
Yeah.
Over the sea.
Yeah. This is like, again, it's like hinting at the return of Thanos in the Avengers movie.
You guys are going to hate me, but I actually, like, don't know what this is.
What?
You guys always talk about this, like, album
or whatever, and I actually
have, like,
it's not
no
an album
clue.
it's an obelisk that fell from the sky, actually.
Okay, yeah. So you
it's
guys
like
need to send
it's like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
It's like 2001 A Space Odyssey, and we're just the monkeys beating each other up around the stone.
Yeah, man. One week we will listen to that album, and
I'm not going
to
give you any more.
Yeah, you don't get to know anything.
I think that
about
I should wait to listen to it until right before we talk about it, so that I can have this fresh perspective.
Totally,
you're going to come in and you're going to be like, "This is seriously the album you've been talking about for the last year. Like, this is what you chose."
All right. I think we should move on to talk about some of the songs.
Yeah.
Because I think agree. We spent a lot of time tearing apart the album as a whole, and we should maybe get Tear more specific. Tear it apart
individually.
So I may be bold in saying this, but I think that we should start with Champagne.
I agree.
First rule of improv, shut everyone down. No, I agree too, because that's nice. One that Champagne. Left a taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
sip.
Just a sip. We're just going to have a little sip of the criticism here, of the criticism juice. I don't know why this is on the album.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean?
Like, does Champagne connect to anything else?
You're asking me as if I didn't prompt him to include the audience. Like, Chance, you don't understand. Like, I get it, but like, explain a bit. Why doesn't Champagne fit?
Like, Champagne, for those not in the know, is a song about, like, allyship, I guess.
Was it about something?
Yeah, I think it was.
With July Talk, it's always about something.
Yeah. But it's sort of about, well, not sort of, they're pretty explicit. It's about how white people need to listen to black people's experiences and not just sort of imagine or project what they think those experiences are, which is what? Oh, no, maybe this is what the album's about. Maybe the album is all about imagining other people and how we succeed and fail in doing so.
Uh-oh. We're doing that right now.
Oh, God. We're imagining them and what they thought this album was about. And in doing so, we are creating a persona of them that does not exist.
Uh-oh.
But it's just our own fabrication.
Are we
going
to love this album by the end of this chat?
We may have to.
Dean's head's actually imploding in front of our
very eyes. No, I'm doing beautiful mind equations on the chalkboard behind me. It's about like the verse that I really liked is, let me find it here, sorry. Don't tell me about the books you've read and the pages you fold. Don't tell me about the colors you claim and the friends you hold. So like classic, like white people like, oh, I have a black friend and I read White Fragility. So like, I think I'm not racist for sure.
Right.
Who are the featured artists on this record or on this song?
James Bailey and Kyla Charter.
Yeah, so they have James Bailey and Kyla Charter come in, as well as a like gospel choir to sort of sing like call and response.
Which I wasn't sure though. I was saying to you earlier, and we were not positive on this, if that was a sample or if that was recorded specifically for this song.
Yeah,
if it was a sample, it makes a little more sense.
I think it was recorded for the song.
Yeah, I think it was recorded for the song.
At least, like, I feel like, I don't know. I looked it up and I couldn't find anything about it being a sample. So, anyway, folks. So this song is about, like, allyship and, like, race relations.
And champagne socialism.
And champagne socialism. Although it doesn't really bring up socialism besides the champagne title.
Yeah, but it's implied.
Yeah, that's literally it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, no.
Oh, and the fun play on words.
Yes, okay. So do you want to walk them through this? Because I might start screaming if I walk them through it.
I would just read it to you, but since it's a play on words, it wouldn't really make sense. Let me pull it up here. So the whole song mentions champagne, as we all know. But it also uses champagne and splits it up into two words.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being sham and the other one being pain.
Yeah. So again, like champagne.
Chancellor's laughing right now, by the way.
Oh my God.
Just for the listeners. He's like dying
champagne
laughing.
Throughout this song is used as like a metaphor for privilege, for the people who can discuss issues of race or poverty or what have you, and sip champagne at the same time. Classic.
Yeah, for a fan of sparkling beverages like myself, I just thought it was about champagne. Just kidding, but
the bubbly.
But so you have like this metaphor about privilege, and from the perspective of disenfranchised, underprivileged voice saying, don't tell me about my pain over champagne. Allow me to explain my sham pain. What?
My fake pain?
My pain that is a sham?
Yeah, or in a privileged position and they have critiques on the system. Their pain isn't the same as the pain of others.
Yeah, but they're saying if it's a sham...
Yeah.
But it's also very confusing because, like, if they're singing from the first person, then that's like, okay, well, like, both Lea Fey and Peter Germanis are white.
Yeah.
But
yeah, this is the white
rest of the song doesn't like it doesn't fit yeah, in I as just, like first I person.
No, this is the white guilt track of the century.
Yeah, yeah, but also like the featured artists are also singing the chorus with them. So I don't know like whose voice is speaking at any given time.
You know what it reminds me of? This is terribly rude, and I would never say this to their face. But you know what it reminds me of?
I hope they're not listening.
Those kind of like anagrams or whatever that people would make in high school where it's like, he loves her, and then you take out certain words and it's like, he lied. Do you remember these?
Yeah.
Am I? I'm not the only one.
Are you
who
like
remembers
Sharpie
this.
Out?
that is cruel.
But that's what that line of thought, like, sounds like someone heard the word champagne and they were like,
"Wait, that sounds like a couple other words I know," and then they write it down. They're like, "That's deep."
Terribly, not super clever. Which is okay. Not everything has to be like mind-blowingly genius. Yeah. But I think when the emphasis is on that, it starts to lose its merit.
Or when you hinge your whole song on that.
When you hear it multiple times, yeah. It comes back around, and that is the whole purpose.
Like that's exactly what I thought. Like if that rhyme or that wordplay was in like a rap song, and whoever just like raps through that very quickly.
And then
you're like, okay, that's sort of clever, but you're already on to the next thing.
And the purpose of that is the rhyming.
Exactly.
This is to tell a story.
Yeah.
And it ends up taking it from a level of seriousness, which is what the topics are about, to kind of like this very elementary space.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? I'm 14 and this is very deep.
Exactly.
Well, and like as I was saying before as well, and I think like this can take on multiple different reasons, but I think that this song, if it was featured on an EP with a couple more songs that sounded like it, or like, you know, a partnership with James Bailey and Kyla Charter where they created a small EP of a couple of songs first, I think that would help it along in the sense that it wouldn't be sitting on its own so much. Because it's
not, it was an extra track.
Yeah, like if someone just played this for me and I had never heard anything else by July Talk, I would probably listen to it and be like, yeah, you know what? Like that's fairly catchy. I'm enjoying this. But because it exists right smack in the middle, like it's song 6 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the only song on the album to have featured artists. It's the only one with a gospel choir.
Yeah, and it just does not fit.
You know what song 6 out of 10 means too, right? It's like that means if you pick it up on record, that's the first track on the second side.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
As soon as you flip the album over, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Good thing or bad thing. Like some people might say that's a reason for why it is the way it is. But at the same time, it's like that's not what I would want on my.
Oh, yeah. But I
on
think
your B-side.
The
on
second B-side. Reason, though, I think that this would exist better as an EP is that I feel like you put less weight on an EP. So if like someone had come out with this on an EP and, you know, they made their champagne reference, you could kind of blow over.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Spiritual but like you miracle. Could kind of get past it a little bit more. But because this is on a full length album from a well-respected band.
Yeah, this made the cut.
Like this came out 4 years after their last album.
Yeah.
You know, and like at least 2 years after they publicly stated that they were going to start working on this album, you expect just a little bit more, right?
Yeah. Like I said, this made the cut. In the studio, they sat around and they talked about this.
Yeah.
And they were like, where should this go on the album?
But it's still, and I want to clarify that, like, I still enjoyed this song as a standalone song because I don't care about lyrics. You know, it was catchy. There was some good elements to it. I did like the fact that they took a little bit of a risk on it, but I would have liked to see that more throughout the rest of the album.
Yeah, or even just in that song. I felt like the risk was what did they say? A calculated risk.
Yeah, and it was very much on the shoulders of the features.
It didn't go as far as I was hoping. Like I heard the intro and I was like, this is weird. But then eventually, as you get through the rest of the song, it stops becoming something interesting weird and starts just becoming more something out of place strange.
Yeah.
Right. at least for me, like it wasn't anything to write home about, but it certainly stood out on the album.
But it is something to podcast home about.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that one, but right now in the recording studio, I'll talk about that one.
Exactly.
Okay then.
Can we talk about the best song on the album?
I
would like to know what the best song
I don't
the
think
album
we have
is.
A consensus. Dean and I already argued about this before yeah. you got in.
Oh no.
I think that the best song on the album is actually the song right before Champagne, which is Pay For It.
You think that's
right.
the best
song
that
on
was
the lead single, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that that was the best song because to me this encompassed the most similar elements from their past albums into this one song. So okay. it was a ballad, but it was obviously a ballad. Whereas I feel like the rest of these songs are super slowed down from their regular work, but it's not quite a ballad. So you're just kind of like wanting it to speed up and get better. Whereas this song was definitely like slower. Lia Fey has a beautiful voice in it. But then it's also mixed with this really distorted guitar sound that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, when I was listening to it, it really reminded me of the kind of stuff that you got in like the Beatles' later work when it came to like Revolution, where you get that like the really nice vocal going on, but then like this really distorted, grungy guitar sound.
Right, right.
And I'm not trying to say that this is as good as the music that was released by the Beatles. I'm just saying that's what I thought of when I heard it.
Yeah, it made you think of like the psychedelia rock blend.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that it was quite good. I think that when I was listening to this album, I was mostly looking for something that reminded me of old July Talk, and that was as close as it got.
Yeah, like this, the whole album in general, but like this song in particular reminded me a lot of the 2017 national record Sleep Well Beast, in that is when the National started like playing around with a little bit grungier instrumentation, especially on their lead single. And then also adding like sort of electronic distorted sounds into the soundscape, which is almost exactly what you get with Pay For It here, which was interesting. But yeah, I actually found an interview that Lia Fey did about this track where she said, quote, "I wrote Pay For It after witnessing a group of men violently attack some of my friends at a fast food restaurant one late summer night. I just found myself asking what had happened in their lives that caused them to normalize this type of behavior. Even though we'd likely never see each other again, I figured they probably needed my love more than they needed my hate," is the quote. So this song is very sort of turn the other cheek. Like,
I love
oh, it. Yeah, so, yeah, someone's got to pay for it, folks. And, you know, we're going to meditate on, you know, the paying for it that we have to do post-violent act. It's also very Hobbesian. It's very, what's the lyric?
Short and brutish.
Yeah, hard to break those ancient habits. Yeah. Hard to kill them. So like, yeah, human beings are just like destined to be like ugly and horrible to each other. Which, you know, that's a little sad.
Yeah.
It's a little depressing.
But I do like these lyrics, though, too, because they kind of are similar enough to, like, what you expect from the original July Talk. Like, they aren't poetic, beautiful, high-level lyrics.
No.
But they, you know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're telling you this story. You connect with it, you feel with it.
Yeah.
And then you get to just like leave it, you know?
Yeah, and it's in a lot of ways, it is sort of like an older July Talk song slowed down because it does have like those short sentences, very punchy statements.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than just going boom, 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 them saying all these things and then jumping into like a guitar solo.
Maybe my perception is wrong, but I feel like like they think highly of the lyricism. Is that not true?
I don't know if they do. I think like
I feel like the lyrics take center stage in a lot of their songs, especially this one.
Well, and I think though, up until I heard Champagne, I would have said that no, they don't take themselves like their lyrics to like they don't hold themselves on a high pedestal on that fact.
Right.
But like, you know, like we were just talking about with Champagne, like they have these funny wordplays that you're like, are you serious?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It makes you wonder because like in my head, I have this feeling that they're being very sincere and very serious, more serious than sincere about what they're saying. And they think that these are very kind of clever ways to get them across. But then it makes it so that the possibility for that humor is kind of lost.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Fair.
It's like when someone, you know, tells you a joke straight faced, you're not immediately going to laugh because you're just like, oh, you're not joking. What were you saying about the guitar solo there, Dean, before I rudely interrupted?
Yeah, well, I was just saying, like, this song is like older July Talk songs in that they have, like, those short, punchy lines and lyrics. Well, in an older July Talk song, they would just sort of, like, quickly race through those and hit you with all these images and all these ideas very quickly and then jump into, like, a fun guitar solo or something. Well, this song does have like those short, punchy lyrics and ideas, but after each line, you sort of sit and you sit with it, and it's slower and quieter and much more like meditative on the lyricism of the song.
Right, right.